The Noose by David Annandale. Read by Jonathan Keeble.
You are marred,
Lord Commander Ariston said. Theotormon was silent. There was nothing he could say, Ariston thought. Not before that self-evident truth. The captain of the Emperor's children strike cruiser, Tharmas, stood in Ariston's quarters aboard the battle barge Athona. His flaws were an affront. No doubt conscious of this, Theotormon kept his peace so as not to give further insult. Ariston was conscious of the irony in his words. They were surrounded by flaws. His irony was deliberate. He revelled in it. Yet it was a false one, for he was justified in upbraiding Theotormon. The tapestry series that covered his walls had once been exquisite in its flawlessness. It was the tribute of Europa. Millennia old, it depicted the birth of the Emperor's children. Brought to heel by the Emperor's thunder regiments during the unification wars on Terra, the nobles of Europa offered up their youth in service to the Emperor. The sequence was a movement from justified defeat to glorious fealty, culminating with the first warriors of the Third Legion marching under the banners of the Palatine Aquila. Or so the tapestries had been. Now they were slashed by an elaborate crosshatch of knife strokes. Nailed to the marble wall behind the hangings were the bodies of remembrancers who had spoken out when the Great Enlightenment had come upon the Legion. Their flesh had been torn with the tapestries, and their vitae had run down and stained the woven fabric. Thus the art of the enemy bled and died. The destruction of the perfect possessed an even greater perfection. But it still wasn't enough, was it? The ordinary, completed flawlessness of the atrocity fell short of the transporting sublimity he sought. The blood had dried and blackened. The suffering was over. But the bleeding should not end. The cries should not fall silent. Blind to the truth that had come to Fulgrim, the enemy should know only pain and more pain. That would be better. That would be closer to true perfection. Theotormon's flaws, on the other hand, were the mundane, unforgivable ones of failure. His flesh and his armour were disfigured by his own hand, but his ship had been scarred by another's.
This is the tally of the encounter in the Harmatia system, Ariston said. The battle barge Calidora destroyed, its escorts, the Infinite Sublime, and the Golden Mean lost as well. And when a full fleet answers the call for help, not only are two more ships lost to mines and the Tharmas damaged, but the enemy escapes. Tell me again, Captain. What enemy is this?
The Iron Hands.
The Iron Hands.
Ariston paused, pretending to sort through his memories.
I was under the impression that we had shattered them at Istvan. Perhaps I was wrong. They must have been able to field a number of formidable squadrons to hurt us that much.
Silence again. Into it fell the distant screams of the tortured. The exploratory desolation of the flesh never ceased aboard the Athona. There was so much to learn. So much to experience. Mortification's supreme ecstasy beckoned just beyond the horizon of knowledge. The cries were now part of the air of the battle barge. They rose and fell with the rhythms of lungs, of hearts. They were the sound of the new soul of the Emperor's children.
How large was the squadron?
Ariston pressed.
They used a single strike cruiser, Theotormon said. The Veritas Ferrum.
His voice was flat. Ariston didn't know if the care with which he kept emotion from his voice was due to shame or anger at being made to answer for the disaster. Ariston hoped it was both.
One strike cruiser, he said. Which then escaped.
Theotormon nodded. At the end of another long silence, Ariston repeated,
You are marred.
I am, Lord Commander.
Theotormon barely hid his resentment.
But from excess comes wisdom, said Ariston. The flaw is the foundation of future perfection.
I do not understand.
Clearly not.
This was why a commander's role was also one of instruction.
We will extinguish the last sparks of the Iron Hand's resistance.
A simple statement of fact. Based on the estimates of the portion of the 10th Legion to have escaped Istvan, the squadrons that were accompanying the Urthona were enough on their own to exterminate the Iron Hands.
But we will not waste resources in searching the galaxy for the hiding places. They will come and offer themselves up to us for the slaughter. Thanks to you. Thanks to your flaws.
I see.
Do you?
You will put the Tharmas out for bait.
Ariston smiled. The razor wire he had threaded through the contours of his lips scratched at his flesh, reopening wounds. The taste of his own blood trickled down his tongue.
Are you helpless?
He asked.
Are you that badly flawed?
Theotormund's left fist tightened.
We can still fight, he said. We have lost half the starboard guns. Our Geller field is unstable. Any jumps we make must be small, and we can't do many.
Hardly bait, then, Ariston said.
He was lying. They both knew it. When the fleet, coming to the aid of the Caladora, had encountered the minefield left by the Veritas Ferrum, not all the ships had been damaged, and some had been hit more severely than the Tharmas. The rest of the fleet had pursued the Iron Hands through the Immaterium and lost them. Ariston's squadrons had joined up with the wounded vessels later, and he had singled out the Tharmas for a reason. He would construct the perfect trap for the Iron Hands, and the Tharmas was the perfect bait. It was strong enough that it could put up a convincing fight, but its injuries were such that Ariston thought it very unlikely it could prevail against a strike cruiser or larger ship. That was the prey Ariston sought. Let Theotormund pick off any minor targets that swallowed the lure. The Lord Commander strode to the ornate desk, dominating the port side of the chamber. Human limbs were fastened to its legs. He picked up a vellum star chart and showed it to Theotormund.
Here,
he said, pointing to the Cyzicus system, a short jump from Hamartia.
You can make it this far, I believe.
Theotormund nodded.
I believe so.
You are fatally marred if you do not. Make for Cyzicus, then call for our help.
And I call until the enemy appears, Theotormund said.
Yes.
My redemption has a high cost.
Ariston frowned at the resentment.
You are fortunate to have this opportunity, he said.
The Delium system had a name only because it existed, and for no other reason. It was uninhabited. Its four planets were all gas giants. None of their moons were colonized. And yet, it was a hostile system. Calibus suspected that he and the ragged fleet he led had found the most hostile corner of it. Fleet. He felt a jab of anger when he remembered what that word had meant to the Iron Hands before Istvan V. It had meant more than a single strike cruiser and a handful of frigates and destroyers, all of them damaged to a greater or lesser degree. He knew he was lucky to have even that much at his disposal. Of his fellow captains, with whom he had managed to make contact after the disaster, he was one of the few to have escaped Istvan with more than a single ship.
Luck. Escape.
Hateful concepts. They should have no place in the experience of the 85th Clan Company of the 10th Legion, or aboard the Bane of Azanoth. They should have remained abstractions, things that enemies relied upon, only to be fatally disappointed when the Iron Hand shut down every destiny except total defeat. But he knew luck and escape now, along with other equally foul terms. Defeat. Treachery. Flight. Then there was that other concept, the worst of them all. Ferus Manus is dead. Like so many of his brothers, he refused the experience of that one. Though its shadow fell over every moment of his existence and every decision he made, he shunned it. He would not think about it. None of them could. Calibus had enough to think about on Galaras. The moon was a study in geological anguish. It was in close orbit around its planet. The gravitational forces of the giant tore and pulled at it. The crust distorted, rising and falling with an ocean's tides. Volcanic eruptions racked the globe, throwing ash plumes hundreds of kilometers into the air. The surface was layers of congealed lava flows. Galaras had no indigenous life forms, but in its constant violence and change, it had its own form of life. Landing on Galaras had been a challenge in itself. The construction of a base was madness. Calibus walked along the outer wall of the madness, inspecting the work. The modular fortification had to be modified if they were going to last more than a day on Galaras's heaving crust. The flesh was weak, yes, always, but sometimes iron could become stronger if it took on some of the characteristics of the flesh. Flexible plasteel seals joined each segment of the walls, giving them a degree of flexibility. Calibus stood motionless, feeling the microquakes and vibrations up from stone, through the walls and through his boots. Both his legs and his right arm were bionic, and the faint thrum ran along their length. The base was on the crest of an isolated hill. Beyond the walls, the land dropped away in a steep slope. The ground was uneven, yet smooth. The succession of flows gave it the contours of melted wax. Ash fell from the sky, an endless blizzard of grey. Visibility was a few hundred metres at best. Though the base's location had been dictated by priorities other than defence, its position was a good one. It would take a very determined and powerful siege to triumph over what was being constructed. Also a mad one. For who would want to contest possession of a worthless satellite in a strategically irrelevant system? This was not a world for the sane to inhabit, not even the sons of Medusa. The Legion's home world put all of its life forms through brutal tests, but it did still support life. He had faith that the Iron Hands could sustain a foothold on Galaras indefinitely, but there were few reasons to do so. Few reasons. There was, however, one in particular. Calibus turned to face the interior of the base. The HAB units were along the periphery, and there weren't many. Even with rebreathers, the mortal serfs of the 85th could not survive long on the surface. The construction of the base and its operation was the work of the legionaries. The central block had been completed, and the project within was proceeding well. Smoke, steam, and sulphur vented from its chimneys. From the interior came the heavy, syncopated beat of machinery. Deep booms and harsh cracks of splintering rock blended with the endless thunder of the distant eruptions. Two legionaries emerged from the block. One was another Iron Hand from the Bane of Azanoth, Rord. The other was Levanas, a battle brother of the Raven Guard contingent that had been part of the desperate flight from Istvan V. Altogether, there were now two squads worth of 19th Legion warriors aboard the Azanoth and its escorts. Calibus knew that some salamanders had also been picked up by his brothers, but there had been none within reach during his own retreat. Rord and Levanas spotted him and strode towards the wall. Calibus waited. When they reached the iron staircase up to the parapet, Levanas hung back, walking more slowly so that Rord would reach Calibus first.
"I take it you have news, Sergeant," Calibus said.
Rord saluted.
"A message from the Azanoth. The Auspex has picked up a distress beacon. It appears to be from the Emperor's children strike cruiser Tharmas."
"Appears to be."
"Full confirmation is impossible," he admitted.
Calibus hadn't expected otherwise. This was the new reality of war in the Imperium. He couldn't trust anything to be what it appeared. Still, this might be what they had been seeking.
"Where is it?"
he asked.
"The Cyzicus system."
That was a piece of data hard to ignore, close enough to the Harmatia system to be convincing. Calibus had not spoken with Atticus since they had conferred along with Plinus and Sabinus by remote lithocast, but a short time ago there had been a signal burst from him. It had been linked to a mine, set to be released upon detonation. It was a proud curse directed at the Emperor's children, but it had been received by the Bane of Azanoth as well. It was Atticus's way of telling his brothers that he was still in the war without jeopardizing his location. There had been no word from Atticus since, and no detection of the enemy. The immense storms that had surged through the Immaterium made communication almost impossible and travel perilous. The risks needed a high prize. The Tharmas might be it. The vessel's location made sense. Calibus could picture it limping just that far from Harmatia. Levanus joined them.
"What do you think, Captain?" he asked.
Levanus had become the liaison between the Raven Guard and the Iron Hands. His qualifications for the role appeared to be an instinctive diplomacy, since he was not an officer by rank. There were none who had escaped with Calibus.
"It is clearly a trap," Calibus said.
It was difficult to speak of strategy with Levanus. The Raven Guard and the Salamanders had not betrayed his Primarch Ferus Manus, but they had not marched with him, as they should have either. He knew Levanus believed in the decisions of Corvus Corax. He knew that there was nothing to be gained in shunning the warriors of the 19th Legion. Trust, though, that was different. He could not trust. Yet he had to, or at the very least not refuse to hear what Levanus had to say. What was left of the Iron Hands must now engage in a new form of warfare. As much as he resented having to admit it, even to himself, this was a form with which the Raven Guard was more familiar.
"Yes," Levanus said. "It is a trap. That does not mean it will be a successful one."
"The Emperor's children do not do things by halves," Rord said. "It will be a good trap."
"I would be insulted otherwise," said Calibus. "Even more insulted than I am by the methods we must use."
Rord muttered.
"Strike from the shadows, then scuttle back."
Levanus smiled to show that he was not offended.
"And the only dishonor," he said, "belongs to the traitor.